Hello and welcome to another episode of Tyra Talks. Today's episode is the second in line of the vaccine series, and I will be going into detail about the MMR vaccination and Dr. Andrew Wakefield. Before I continue, however, I'd like to apologise for the huge delay in getting this episode out to you. It's just sort of life got in the way a little bit, and before I knew it, it'd been a couple of months. So I do deeply apologise for that, and I will not be taking such big breaks in future. So the reason why I've chosen to dedicate this episode to the MMR vaccine and Dr. Andrew Wakefield is because that's where the whole debate truly began, and how sort of the media ran with these stories starting in 1995 to date. So I think that when I speak to people and I've heard other people speaking about the supposed myth behind the MMR vaccination and the doctor who initially came up with this supposed theory that's often brandished around media and among, the public, is that, oh, MMR causes autism, but that's been debunked. And actually, this doctor was completely, full of rubbish, and he's no longer a doctor. And therefore, you mustn't listen to what was initially published because it's all untrue, is the main sort of rhetoric that goes around generally, when discussing anything in relation to vaccinations. What's interesting is a lot of people often discuss vaccinations in a manner which is related to autism purely. So, or they say things like death. It's not. Would you rather an autistic child or a death ch ch a dead child? And that type of comment often comes out, which is obviously very sort of insensitive, and shows a huge often shows a huge lack of understanding regarding the autism spectrum, because indeed it is a spectrum. And your ideal autism of a child sort of, behaving, let's say, quote unquote, normally throughout 90% of his day, and then having the 10% of, difficult times of, say, repetitiveness or not listening and difficulty in focusing on things, versus the other end of the spectrum where a child is a danger to himself or herself. And the spectrum is absolutely huge, whereby there are instances where a parent has to become a full-time carer for their child because they are in such of a state with the level of autism that they have been diagnosed with that they're not able to function at all. So it's a very difficult thing to understand, and I think that people just sort of when they make comments like "Would you rather this? Would you rather that?" No one wants a their child to be dead. Okay, that's the general gist of it. The vast majority, I can say, of parents certainly won't want that. However, if you see your child is suffering every day and has no life and, is living a really difficult life, sometimes you might want better for that child. I don't know. Heaven forbid that I'm in that position. But I can only imagine, a fraction of how those parents must feel, whereby they can't take their child anywhere, they can't have, give the child everything they need, and all the other children they have, if they do choose to have any more, suffer as a result as well, and the parents cannot work, or at least one of them can't work. You have to be a full-time carer as well as a parent, and you know, having to be a full-time carer for a such a unwell child up into their adult life, you know, you start one starts to be concerned as to what will happen to their child when their child is an adult, but you know, is a minor in the sense that they are incapable of making any decisions, and the parents become elderly and infirm and possibly concerned that they might die with leaving a child behind that cannot look after themselves. So there is a huge thing, a range of concerns to be, you know, sort of understanding of when it comes to what autism really is. I am absolutely no expert, and I'm not trying to, you know, say that I am, but I think that it addresses the very insensitive comments that are made by the vast majority of the public who take part in conversations about vaccines and the MMR vaccine in particular, and autism, and how it's often thrown in the faces of parents who choose to either question or delay or choose not to vaccinate for whatever reason they may have. You know, it could be family history of adverse reactions to vaccinations. It could be religious reasons as to why they choose not to vaccinate. You know, there are a whole host of reasons why people are choosing not to vaccinate and have always had those choices from the 60s when the vaccination programs were developed and rolled out. So, what I wanted to go into now is Dr. Wakefield. So, who is he? Who is this man that has, you know, taken this situation and brought it to the limelight in such a manner that nearly 20 years, oh no, I beg your pardon, over 20 years later, people are still discussing it with such great passion. And what I wanted to go into about him was that this doctor, he's a British doctor, although some people believe he's American, which again shows that the lack of sort of drive within people to actually find out about this information, to actually want to understand what it is that they are allowing their children to have. You know, there are parents who research vaccines and still decide, you know, regardless of what they find, that the benefits outweigh the costs, and so they choose to continue, and that's highly respectable. But then on the other hand, you get parents who know absolutely nothing about it. They haven't looked at the cost-benefit ratio. They haven't looked at the research. They don't know who they're talking about or anything about the matter, and still have a very, very, very strong opinion. And that's the bit that's very troubling. And when you And the thing is, it's not their fault, because parents, just like anyone else, anyone, members of the public, have, you know, a faith, and they have a trust and confidence in medical professionals, and they expect, and we would all expect, I should say, that those medical professionals will provide us with the information, the full information, that we require in order to maybe be able to consent to something fully, right? That they would be able to provide us with the answers to any questions regarding something that is going to be put into our bodies, whatever that might be. That could be food, for instance, because these days, you know, particularly with the rise of allergies and such different food choices from religious reasons, philosophical reasons, political reasons of food consumption, you know, restaurants are very sort of, most restaurants, I could say, are trained to be clued on as to what is in the food, so that when customers ask these questions, the waiters are fully informed and are able to provide what is actually in it. If they can't, then you say, I will opt out on that basis. And it happens with food all the time. I saw it today. I was in a restaurant and there was a child who ordered a vegan pasta dish, and they came with some cheese on the side, some vegan cheese, which was made from soy. And the father of the child asked the waitress, what's this on the side? Is that cheese? And she said, it's cheese, it's vegan cheese. And he said, oh, what's it made of? And she said, nuts and soy. And he said, oh, my son is allergic to soy, right? And so, because she was able to say that, provide the information, he was able to make an instant decision as to why the child should not have that, because in the past, he has reacted badly to it. So it's the same concept, and that's why, my take is that there's no point in bashing parents or assuming that a parent should want to know more about the things that the child is consuming or being injected with or being offered by the medical industry. One has a natural sort of right, if you like, to assume that these industries that we have trust and confidence in are providing us with genuine information and things that are good for us, whatever that might be. And so what this series even, of vaccine information that is coming from a more balanced perspective is essentially trying to just do just that. Because, even if one parent decides, oh, let me look into it a little bit more, there is evidence here that suggests that it can't be 100% safe, because of course we've had court cases both here in the UK and America, in the United States of America, to say that vaccines are unavoidably unsafe, and therefore all information must be provided, on that basis for you. So, going back to Andrew Wakefield. So he is a British doctor. He has now been quote unquote discredited. And it's interesting because when you Google him and you go onto his Wikipedia page, it's absolutely written in a very one-sided manner. And it says that he became an anti-vaccine activist. My research has not shown that to be the case. Okay, so he is a British doctor. He was a gastroenterologist, and that he was a world-renowned doctor. At that point, he was one of the world's leading gastroenterologists, in the ni early 90s. And he was actually investigating Crohn's disease and the exposure to mumps, measles, or the measles in particular, in a particular manner, in relation to a leading to some type of gut issue, such as leaky gut syndrome, or some type of colitis, or Crohn's disease. And what ended up happening was that a lot of parents would tell him that their child had developed autism after the MMR vaccination, and the link between all these children, the vast majority of children with autism at that point, and to put to this point, in fact, is that they do end up having some type of gut issues, and diagnosed with gut problems. Out of the whole host that are out there, it could be any one of those. And so it was his interest to continue studying that, and as a result of the studying of the gut, and the link of becoming exposed to the measles virus via a primary way of becoming exposed was via the vaccination, and after that, the damage to the gut leading to a lack of blood flow to the gut area was what was concluded to have caused all these gut issues. And in the same time, as a result of that, he essentially said, in a very sort of, very minimized way of explaining things, that the inability for the gut to process toxin, certain type of toxins, it was crossing into the blood, into the brain, and therefore that was causing the lack of robustness, if you like, or the more likely that the damage to the gut was causing the autism. So it was connected, but it wasn't as simple as, oh, the MMR causes autism. And of course, the papers, as they do, the media ran with that, and that became the headline. And everyone was sort of like, how do you get your head around that? But until you've actually read his research, his published research, listened to what the actual controlled studies were, having a look at the way in which the controlled studies took place with signed consent forms, which are available on the Vaxxed, the movie.com website, where the Lancet study signed consent forms with the dates of the colonoscopy, the patient numbers, and the references are all available in order for you to look at. And the other interesting thing is most of the mainstream media says that the study that Dr. Wakefield published along with the 12 other co-authors of the study, if you like, other doctors who did the study with him, who actually, I suppose, in a way, must have been given an opportunity to opt out of being associated with the paper, and therefore, very quickly, when given the chance to opt out and not be part of it anymore, were happy to let it go and say that, excuse me, say that it wasn't, they were happy to just sort of take it back and say, yeah, it didn't work, or that they don't have faith in the study of for some reason or another, and quickly went back. And of course, the reason why, if you think about it, they're not the ones who've been, crossed off the medical register. They still have practicing certificates and are able to practice as doctors. Unlike Andrew Wakefield. So perhaps it was a move for the continuation of their career, because it seems when looking further into Dr. Wakefield and his responses at the time, that he was very well aware that the conclusions of this study and the findings would lead him to a very, very windy path, and that he could potentially ruin his career. And he was aware of that because he understood the power of media and the power of the pharmaceutical industry, and that he single-handedly couldn't just go up against them and everyone would listen to him, because it caused such a controversy as it was already, that just his findings alone, which were published in a journal, The Lancet, which is known to be a very established and prestigious medical journal, a British one. And in order for them to have even published it, there must be rigorous checks in the first instance to even let medical studies become published, because that can be accessed by the public. And so this can affect, people's lives, of course, and also can assist other countries with their development of treatments and things like that. So in order for a journal like The Lancet to even let the study be published is for me a separate question. However, they revoked the study from the journal in 2010, and it's completely difficult right now to try to find the actual study itself. And as the as sort of time goes on, and there is more and more sort of censoring in a sense of the information available that discusses vaccinations in the opposite manner, we can see that there is far less information available now. So you have to know where to look, and so I'm going to try my best to ensure that I am providing you with the names of websites and or the gist of it, so that when you do put it into any search engine, that it should come up. So there was also another interesting point about Dr. Wakefield's way in which he actually performed testing for part of the testing for this st these studies was that he asked his son's friends who came over for a birthday party to give blood samples so that he could, have them as part of his study. And initially, it sounded like what he did was he just sort of offered, sweets and money to these children, and just without the permission of their parents, just took their blood. And kids are funny, so they probably would be like, "Yeah, this is so cool. He took my blood." But actually, the myth to debunk here is that those parents did consent for this for the blood to be taken at the birthday party, although it was very unusual thing to do. I can imagine if someone's a doctor, that it's quite sort of common that someone would say, "Oh, check me," or "Yeah, take my blood," or "Is that okay?" or "Could you give me something from your first aid kit, for my headache," and that type of thing. So it might just be that the case. And it's just like whenever you're a professional, I mean, as a lawyer, I get questions all the time. You're just having a random conversation with someone, and then all of a sudden there comes this huge legal situation that you need to dissect and advise on, hypothetically, hopefully most of the time. But yeah, it's just happens, when you're a professional in something, people want to know more. So he, Dr. Wakefield, practiced here for the majority of his career, and he did go over to the United States to practice as well. But he doesn't, he practiced in a different capacity there, and in more sort of studies and in academia. So one of the other issues was that Dr. Wakefield's reputation was dragged down by a journalist, Mr. Deer, and his questioning and I'd say inappropriate use of language when it came to his reporting is very clear to be seen, even if you are pro-vaccine, which says a lot about it. But I want to go further into Dr. Wakefield without, it's so much to talk about in this particular episode that it's honestly quite difficult to stay stay on topic. So in 1996, an attorney, solicitor bar of the law firm Dawbarnes, contacted well he, a solicitor I should say contacted Dr. Wakefield to ask if he would serve as an expert in a legal case on behalf of children injured by vaccines containing the measles virus. The lawyer was bringing the suit on behalf of parents who alleged that vaccines had caused their children's disabilities, including autism. 6 months before this, the independent an independent of the litigation effort, parents of children with autism and severe gastrointestinal symptoms began contacting Dr. Wakefield because of his publications on the measles vaccine, asking for help for their children's pain and suffering, which they believed was vaccine induced. Dr. Wakefield made two major but separate decisions about it at the time, to try to help the families dealing with autism and gastrointestinal problems, and to become an expert in the legal case regarding vaccines and autism. Now, I will be going into very briefly touching on another case, UK case as well, where a mother who set up an organisation called JABS, which is Justice Awareness and Basic Justice Awareness and Basic Information, something like that it's called. And it's an organisation that was set up by a parent who whose son had drastically deteriorated after the MMR vaccination. And that was some time ago now, 19. So it would have been back right in the beginning, in 1995 or 6, where he suffered such, he regressed from his growth at 13 months, and just gradually got worse and worse, and ended up with a very, very, very severe stage of autism. And she finally won her case, and during that whole period, you know, she was awarded £90,000 in compensation, where a tribunal had concluded in the UK that it could be no coincidence that Robert, her son, had suffered his first seizure 10 days after being vaccinated. 10 days is the incubation period. And even now, when you go to the doctors and they offer you the MMR vaccination for your child at the age of 12 months, it does say that, you know, you've got 4 weeks in which, you know, you should keep an eye on them. And particularly the first 2 weeks is like, you know, there's a whole series of symptoms that one needs to look out for. And in fact, what I found very interesting is that that list is now the common symptoms listed, provided by the GP surgeries in the UK from this year onwards, is actually far longer than it ever used to be before. So now all the symptoms that were initially and to still to this day on the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention website, as well as all of the vaccine inserts from every single vaccine manufacturer from GlaxoSmithKline to Merck, all mention that the adverse reactions are to get atypical measles. Encephalitis, of course, death is also part of that, which is, you know, interestingly, a symptom, a potential symptom side effect of the MMR vaccination, which I find so interesting that a lot of the parents who condemn those choosing not to vaccinate don't ever offer them that piece of information, that the measles may cause death, but the MMR vaccine can also cause death, interestingly. So, but I digress. So going back to that point is the fact that even the vaccine is, manufacturers are saying that atypical measles, for example, the rash itself is a rare side effect of the MMR vaccine. But now the GP surgeries have put in, I suppose, as a liability thing, have now started to offer that as a list of common symptoms. And I was astounded when my friend's daughter, only a month ago, experienced atypical measles after her measles vaccination. and I suggested that she fill out the yellow card injury reporting scheme, if you like, for Europe, regarding the fact that she'd had this reaction. But the doctors said it was completely normal. Can you believe? Completely normal reaction, and she'll be fine. And I was so sort of shocked because even the manufacturer of the vaccine is saying it is not normal. So, we have that huge gap in knowledge when it or lack of provision of information, whichever it is. I'd like to believe that it's a lack of knowledge because then it excuses the behavior and the huge ignorance on part of our medical practitioners, namely general practitioners, who really sort of with very minimal information push this program onto parents by pretending that there are outbreaks everywhere. I mean, that's literally happening right now in 2019. We have regular text messages stating that there's a measles outbreak, and that one must bring their child in and have the vaccine, interestingly. So yeah, but going returning back to the conversation about the mother, Jackie Fletcher, who was the founder of JABS, a support group for the vaccine injured and their families, she got the £90,000 compensation. So just to add, it's called Justice, Awareness and Basic Support. That's it. That's where the JABS come in. It's actually a really good play on words, I have to say. So the UK government, according to the JABS website and the vaccineinjury.uk website, the UK government has paid out about £73 million to nearly 1,000 children and adults, representing one in eight claimants who are 60% or more injured by a vaccine between 1979 and 2014. Vaccines have been accepted by most governments to cause a multitude of devastating injuries, including brain damage, seizure disorders, deafness, Guillain-Barré syndrome, encephalitis, and death. So, what I find very interesting with regards to the vaccine injury fund, our vaccine damage payment fund rather, is that actual words for it, is that the vast majority of applications that are put in for compensation for vaccine injuries are not are not paid out or even accepted, and that speaks volumes, to the point that the vast majority, there is not a single person that I know, not one person who is aware of the vaccine damage payment in the UK. None. There are a few people who had been made aware of the compensation schemes available in the US, interestingly. So imagine this, that very few people are even aware of it, yet there are still thousands of applications for compensation on it. And what's even more sort of, something to question, curious rather, is that the criteria for the application of vaccine damage payment, suggests that it could be a whole host of symptoms, from neurological disorders to death. So the injuries sort of speak for themselves. So if the government has accepted liability on behalf of pharmaceutical companies, vaccine manufacturers, that this program could cause a whole host of very dangerous adverse reactions, and to the point where they have created a pot of money that would be given to those who are successful in their claims to prove that death or autism or any other type of illness was caused by the vaccine, it obviously proves that it has been widely accepted that the vaccine can cause all of these issues, particularly death and autism. And so that's not really a debate, that is a matter of fact that it can happen. There is nothing that the manufacturers can do about it. They don't deny it, you know, and the government's been very much aware of it, you know, for decades. And the whole point is that the basis in which it all falls is that all of these bodies and most people who are calling the shots when it comes to healthcare in England and Wales, whether it's, you know, NHS England or you know, the health ministers for England and Wales and Scotland and Northern Ireland, is that which are very, very different. I mean, Northern Ireland has a very different medical care system to ours here in England and Wales, for instance. But that's something else to get into another time, perhaps. But going back to the point is that if it's sort of interesting to me that if all of these bodies have accepted that they can be side effects, why is it that GPs don't accept it? Why is it that if a parent questions a GP as to whether this vaccination can cause death, they say absolutely not, that it's completely safe, that they've never seen anything happen before? I mean, you know, how can you say that when there's been millions of parents throughout Europe, America, and the UK who have complained that there have been serious, severe, adverse reactions after vaccinations for their children, whether it be at the age of 4 months old or whether it be at the age of 13 months or 3 years or even teenagers, you know, from the HPV vaccine, for example. So this is an ongoing issue throughout from birth to adolescence, and there are many, many parents who have seen and experienced, witnessed, you know, a loss of their child in a way, shape, or form, more absolute loss in terms of death, through these vaccine programs. And yet, if anyone ever mentions it or even questions it, it seems to be a complete backlash and alienation and degradation and just sort of ostracizing of parents who've chosen to live holistically without medication, or and without vaccinations, which are classed in as a separate category from drugs. You know, they are classed as biologics, which is another interesting point to make. And when it comes to the law, particularly, that would definitely have an impact. And I think, you know, there is such a lot to unravel here, particularly with Dr. Wakefield's case that went before the General Medical Council here in the UK, as well as the courts, that you know, leaves a lot to be desired, a lot of questions that are not fully answered. And I will have to go further into it because, you know, the legal side of me, and for all my you know, lawyers out there who would be very interested, I'm sure would have all these questions going around in their mind and would potentially have a great discussion about this maybe one day. But it is very interesting that the accusations and allegations against Dr. Wakefield were as they were, resulting in discreditation and scratching him off the register. I find that quite curious because it just doesn't warrant the allegations versus the actions that were taken by him in the first instance, such as, let's say, for instance, one of his accusations was that he shouldn't have carried out colonoscopies. Of course, colonoscopies are when they check the colon with a camera at the end of a little pipe, a pipe, if you like. A tube is the preferred word, I suppose. And have a look inside to make sure there's no sort of growths, and you know that everything is okay in that region. And of course, if somebody has gut lining problems, and it's possible that they may have issues in their colon, and so you know it sort of evened out, I suppose. You know, made sense. However, it is said that you know that apparently it was inappropriate. In a way, now I wouldn't say inappropriate in the manner of sexual abuse or child abuse, but it seems that that was definitely an accusation against. Sorry, not the abuse, but the sort of unnecessary procedure to carry out a colonoscopy on these children. So that's interesting. I mean, the other thing is that most of the online information boards and articles and Wikipedia all mention that the study that he conducted, which proved a strong link between the MMR vaccination and the way that it produces itself in the human body of a young person, or a child, or an infant, baby, you know, is linked to autism. And so he said that that study was never able to be replicated again, and that proves the fact that it is, in fact, a wrongful study, and the outcomes were rightly excluded from the journal, and it is right that Dr. Wakefield and be struck off and completely discredited for all his work over the years, because this particular one is completely false. Now, what's very interesting is if in fact it's untrue, then actually there are tens of journals out there, medical journals from different countries, from Japan to Germany, Canada, Cuba, you know, a lot of others who were able to successfully replicate the study with the same findings, in fact. And those, I have a link to those journals that were able to prove, you know, that in fact what he said was absolutely true. And also, what I find interesting about this whole thing is, you know, there's also another doctor who hasn't been discredited. His name is Dr. Marcel Kinsborn. He is a professor of psychology and director of cognitive neuroscience, and he has his own page, and he has appeared as an expert witness on numerous vaccine injury cases, whereby he has been able to ascertain whether or not the vaccine has caused the neurological damage leading to conditions such as autism in young children. And he has been completely respected in his studies and findings, and has been a reputable expert witness in such cases for many, many years. And he, in fact, was also a part of he was a witness, an expert witness in the case set up by Mrs. Fletcher of JABS in the UK, where he was able to say that indeed the vaccine had caused the autism in her son Robert. And the tribunal in the UK found that it is not a coincidence that the It was no coincidence, in the actual terms, that the vaccination had caused the autism. So, you know, this level of information, I think, it is such a shame that the media do it absolutely no justice whatsoever. And it's interesting because over the past couple of months, whilst I've been away from recording the podcast, is you know, I was approached by four journalists, two of whom I did interviews for, one for a documentary about both sides of the vaccine debate, one who wanted to discuss more about the way in which information is unraveled to the public, and whether there is a duty and that in line with the vaccine debate. And then there were two from the BBC, whom I didn't speak to in the end, because it seemed that the BBC had so many pro-vaccine agendas that it was sort of possibly in a bid to twist words and create something of hysteria. And so I don't think that there's any point in doing that. I think it's much better to provide people with evidence, sources, and an unbiased perspective, which is why I'm recording these series without giving my opinion, for that exact reason. Because if after listening to this you go choose to research, wonderful. If you don't, then you have questions that you can ask. Whether after those questions, whether you choose to vaccinate or not to vaccinate, is completely fine. I think is completely valid and perfect. And I think that I think my main sort of push in this regard is to ensure that parents are questioning everything, because we're living in such uncertain times, and a lot of faith has been placed on professionals whereby it need not be. Dr. Wakefield was also an expert witness in many of these vaccine cases, and actually this was another accusation that was put against him, was that he was conspiring to defraud the system by taking bribes from no, essentially they were saying that the Legal Services Commission here in the UK, or who would the Legal Aid Board back then, were essentially trying to bribe to come up with bribe him to come up with studies to show that it does cause autism so that they could win cases. Essentially, that was what. So the accusations from the pharmaceutical industry were huge. They weren't just against the doctor, but they were also against our legal system, which it seems to have gone amiss in these discussions, which I find rather interesting. I think that if my legal friends listening to this will certainly understand the severity of that accusation, because the accusation was brought by the General Medical Council, and of course, having worked for one of these councils, I think I might have mentioned which one, but I do find it rather interesting, because they are set a body set up by a gov an Act of Parliament to assist with cases against the government, if you like, and cases against ca cases that would completely back up the court system. And the whole point is that we're trying to reduce that, because that has been found to be a barrier to the access to justice. And so reducing caseloads is of paramount importance to our justice system at the moment. Is that justice? I don't know, but that's a different conversation. And as you can see, I have to keep going back and forth, because it's such a huge, complicated topic, that it is literally unjust to just, summarize and get on with it. And that's been one of my struggles, actually, trying to record this section of the podcast. So, but one thing we can go back to with regards to Dr. Wakefield is that, going back to that point, is that he was asked to be a witness, an expert witness in cases against vaccines. And what was interesting was that he decided to look at all the safety studies of the combined MMR vaccination, prior to which there was a single measles vaccination here in the UK, which was always allowed up until 1995, where a lot of parents opted for that. What happened was, when the MMR vaccination was introduced, as a combination vaccine. The safety studies on it were in Dr. Wakefield's words, so appalling. He was appalled by the studies that he decided that he couldn't support and say that the MMR vaccine was safe. And because of that reason, the reason why that he couldn't say that, it was safe for the public, that's what caused the main concern. He did, however, say that he thinks that the single measles vaccine is far safer, and he did promote the use of that to the point that his children were vaccinated with it. So it was interesting that, especially with regards to the law, if you are to engage a expert witness in a case, that it is expected that the expert witness is an expert in the matter in which he is being called to provide evidence. Okay, so it makes sense that Dr. Wakefield would have gone through all of the safety studies, because it would have been part of his duty as a expert witness in a case such as this, that he is able to answer a question as to whether or not the said vaccine that he's discussing is actually safe, because that was in question, when these cases went to court, and when the liability had changed, and when the vaccine damage payment had been set up. All of those things were bits of information that were absolutely required for such an expert to know about. So, of course, that information didn't lend any favors to vaccine manufacturing companies, who are extremely powerful and have a lot of persuasive power when it comes to governments. And so, it led to, as you can imagine, where I'm going with this. I'd love to go into real in-depth information and very many attempts to delve into every inch of detail about these cases. It was very difficult to actually collate all of that information in a manner that's palatable for listeners. Was really sort of a very, very difficult challenge, and I wasn't able to do it in that way. However, what I can do is provide you with sources and links to look into it yourself, and possibly in the future I can look further into doing a complete episode on just Dr. Wakefield, and not necessarily, from a legal perspective, and not from the vaccine perspective. And perhaps that will be a lot easier to follow with regards to it, because currently there is just such a lot. There's the studies to discuss. There are, all the cases, the people that he helped, the organizations that were willing to help him tell his story, which I just find absolutely fascinating. There's a Mercola, Take Control of Your Health, website, and he's a doctor, Mercola, and he basically interviewed Dr. Wakefield in a never before seen type interview, where he really goes into depth with why the controversy was so big, why the study landed him in such hot water, and why, in September of the same year that the study came out, that in 1998, when the recommendation was made public during a press conference, that the 250-page report, as discussed, concluded that that he could not support the use of the combined 3-in-1 MMR vaccine, as it simply wasn't safe. And the recommendation was made public during a press conference of February 1998, at which time single measles vaccines were still available in the UK. But in order to protect the MMR vaccine policy, in September of 1998, the British government withdrew the importation licence for the single measles vaccine, leaving parents without any choice but to vaccinate with the triple MMR vaccine or not at all. As a result of that, that's when the decline in vaccination began and an increase in measles outbreaks, but they're saying. But rather than acknowledging the lack of safe options, Dr. Wakefield was singled out as an anti-vaccine advocate, whose recommendations caused a decline in children being vaccinated and hence responsible for the increase in measles. Dr. Wakefield replied that, quote, "It's my opinion that it is entirely their responsibility that there has been a declining vaccine uptake in the UK, because they removed the option of the single vaccine and there have been outbreaks of infectious diseases as a consequence," end quote. And, you know, there's such a lot more to it than that. But what I find very interesting, and the other thing that I wanted is that there are the studies that I mentioned to you earlier. So Mercola Take Control of Your Health is a site that, you know, has various different health questions and information and links to a lot of journals. And actually, the 28 studies from around the world that supported Dr. Wakefield's controversial findings were, and I'm going to try and go over them. I'll go over a handful at least so that you can have access to those if you need to, is the Journal of Pediatrics in November 1999, then Journal of Pediatrics in 2000, the Journal of Clinical Immunology, November 2003, the Journal of Neuroimmunology, 2005, the Brain Behavior in Immunity Journal, Pediatric Neurology, Neuropsychobiology, the Journal of Pediatrics, Autism Insights, Canadian Journal of Gastroenterology, Annals of Clinical Psychiatry, Journal of Child Neurology, Journal of Autism and Developmental Disorders, March 2009, Medical Hypotheses, August 1998, Journal of Child Neurology, July 2000, The Lancet, but this was an older version of this similar study in 72, Journal of Autism and Childhood Schizophrenia, this is much older, but Journal of Clinical Immunology in November 2003, and the list goes on. There are just so many medical journals that actually do end up going further into this. And, you know, the ultimate truth is the fact that those studies have been replicated to the point where there are so many countries whereby the vaccines have been banned at some point or another, whether it's, you know, Samoa is certainly a country where the MMR vaccine was banned at a period, as it was in Japan, and Canada, even the UK. There was a point where, you know, we had to ban a batch of the vaccine. And what happened to that? What happened after that was when they found the batch had been contaminated, and it was causing meningitis in people. You know, they ended up sending the whole load to a developing country like Brazil, and the same thing happened in Brazil. Everybody was developing, getting the vaccinations, and there were huge outbreaks of meningitis. And so, you know, there's such a lot of experimentation going on, and, you know, if it's not good enough for, there's a lot of politics involved here. If it's not good enough for, you know, European children, European privileged children, then, you know, let's send our damaged cast-offs to brown children around the world in Africa, Asia, and, you know, developing parts of South America and Central America, and let them have it so that, you know, the profit is still there. And that's a really sort of sorry side of, you know, vaccinations, and that sort of Suppose dangerous drugs being distributed unethically. So yeah, I mean, there is obviously there has become, as you can imagine now, and you can see from what I've said, that there was clearly a real danger with the indemnifying of the vaccine manufacturers, because it's caused such injustice. And it's interesting that Dr. Wakefield talks about the fact that the Department of Health, the UK Department of Health, had contacted his medical school to shut down any further research that could prove that vaccines are problematic. And there was so much effort to concerted efforts to stop behind the scenes to stop his work from being developed and put out further. And that sort of rings alarm bells for me, because why are there millions of children going through adverse reactions from unexplained SIDS death 2 days after the MMR vaccine to complete sort of vegetative state, and lifelong neurological damage, that's not really able to be reversed, right? So there are so many families in the UK who have gone through this, and that's the crying shame, really. So now I'm going to move on to our historical vaccine development in the UK and the introduction of the routine vaccine programs in the UK. I've got an absolutely wonderful link from the publishingservice.gov.uk, the vaccine timeline, which is up to date to 2019. And it goes into the fact that the single measles vaccine was introduced to the UK in 1968. Okay. And the MMR was 1988. Okay, so the reason why I want you to remember that 1968 is because I also have a list from the government gov.uk website about measles notifications and deaths in England and Wales from 1940 to 2016. So there would be in 1940 there were around 500,000 notifications of the measles being people being diagnosed with the measles. There were 857 deaths that year out of 500,000. You can do the percentages if you want to. In 1941 there were again around the similar figure of 500,000, but the deaths were a little bit higher, 1,145 deaths from measles in 1941. I'm gonna keep going, and actually it reduces drastically in 1942, 1943, and then it reduces all the way to in 1956 to 28 cases of deaths in 160,556 measles notifications. There are 28, only 28 deaths. In 1957 is a very high number, 633,678 notifications of measles and 94 deaths. And then we go to 1968, where there were 236,000 154 notifications of measles and 51 deaths. And the interesting point about these figures is that these measles, the contraction of these of the disease isn't, well, the infection, I should say, isn't given an age, so we don't know whether it's necessarily children, even though it was classed as a childhood illness. So we can we more likely it's more likely to have been a childhood illness than not, is what we can say. So we can definitely say that it's higher, there's much higher percentage that it was those were children. And then, so we go to 1968, 236,154 with 51 deaths. That was with the introduction of the vaccine. And then I'm going to just jump to 1988, where the MMR vaccine was actually 1987, just before the MMR vaccine was introduced. There were 42,158 notifications of measles and only 6 deaths. The MMR vaccine was introduced, and there were 86,001 notifications of measles and 16 deaths, which was higher than the year before. So the year of the MMR vaccine introduction, there was almost a double in the amount of measles cases, and more than double of the deaths as well. So in 1994, there were 0 deaths from the measles, but there were 16,000 measles cases. 1996, there were 5,614 and notifications and 0 deaths. So there was an increase from there were no deaths, but there were obviously there were also lesser notifications of measles as well at the time. And so I'd like to just come up to 2016. There were 1,642 1,642 cases of measles. So actually, we've never had a zero. There have been low death rates and 0 death rates throughout the past 20 odd years, but we've never had no cases of measles. So the fact is that even with the introduction of the vaccine, there hasn't been a complete elimination in measles cases. The disease is not dead. It hasn't been eliminated, right? So that's one thing to be aware of, because a lot of people say that it had magically disappeared, and just because people have chosen to not vaccinate, it's just reappeared. And actually, that's completely false information, and it is not true. It was never killed off, if you like. So the Office for National Statistics, also on the government website, states, prior to 2006, the last death from acute measles was in 1992. In 2006, there was one measles death in a 13-year-old male who had an underlying lung condition and was taking immunosuppressive drugs. Another death in 2008 was also due to acute measles in an unvaccinated child with a congenital immunodeficiency, whose condition did not require treatment with immunoglobulin. In 2013, one death was reported in a 25-year-old man following an acute pneumonia as a complication of measles. In 2016, one death was reported in a 10-month-old infant who suffered complications due to a secondary infection. All other measles deaths since 1992 shown above are in older individuals and were caused by the late effects of measles, and these infections were acquired during the 1980s or earlier when epidemics of measles occurred. So what's very interesting here is our own government website is clearly stating here that the epidemics of measles occurred during the 80s and earlier, yet we still have that terminology used today, when actually, 1,000 cases, even 6,000 cases of measles, that is not an epidemic. Okay, especially in comparison to the fact that there were 500,000, and now it's drastically reduced to, within a few thousand, and under 10,000 cases of notifications with 0 deaths, or one, even one death is still within the 0% figure. I just wanted to highlight those points, because I think there's a hell of a lot of fear mongering when it comes to the understanding of the introduction of the vaccines and death rates and actual cases of measles, where people are often under the impression that there were 0 measles cases, which is completely untrue. There's always been a fluctuation of high levels of measles cases and low, always in the thousands, never less. Pretty much. So, And you know, how sort of what kind of an impact did that have? And what's very interesting is, you know, from the late 80s to particularly throughout the 90s, from, you know, 1989, 90, all the way up until now, there's been a huge introduction of the use of antibacterial gels, and cleanliness and hygiene in general has been hugely pushed. To top On top of that, there have been dietary changes. Healthy diet and living healthfully have been absolutely pushed and highly significant, all of which play a huge role in the way in which the body handles disease, particularly childhood diseases, which all of our grandparents would have gone through, you know, interestingly survived and been strong and have very strong immune systems as a result. The contraction of the measles virus is, I should have called it a virus earlier. I think I called it an infection. I beg your pardon, it's a virus. Is that, you know, it has been shown that the antibodies created from the contraction of the wild measles virus provides lifelong immunity, as well as immunity from various cancers, particularly and also cardiovascular disease. And that's not debated. That's often in many medical journals, and often a known sort of factor when it comes to people who are trained medically. So I think that I can leave you with those thoughts, and definitely happy to take questions, and you know, really would love some feedback as to whether or not it provided enough information to at least question the mythology and debunking of myths regarding and surrounding Andrew Wakefield and the MMR vaccine, and what happened there. I know it was quite a lot of information, and it was difficult to keep on top of, because such it steers off into so many branches that I think in order to do it justice, I will certainly have to record a legal perspective on it. But for now, I'm going to leave you with those thoughts. And the Public Health England was a website that has a lot of this information. The Mercola website's absolutely fantastic, and as is JABS. The Office of National Statistics also has a lot of this information, and more than happy for you to absolutely go onto the GlaxoSmithKline websites and the Merck website and find the vaccine inserts that they are called, and have a look through each individual one. And the Baby Jabs Clinic website, based in London, also has a lot of information provided for you with regards to vaccines and their schedules and ingredients and statistics, etc., which is also quite a balanced site, because you know they offer vaccines, but they also offer a whole host of very honest information. So I'd suggest certainly having a look at that if you are stuck in where to research. And there are a couple of documentaries. Vaxxed is one of them, and it's you know, highly controversial, because a lot of people think that it's full of propaganda, and you know, possibly you might possibly feel that way too, and that's completely fine. And so it's probably more important to listen to interviews about the situation in order to formulate your own views. Perhaps you want to watch Faxed and question all the doctors on there. The other thing that you could do is also purchase a book called Dissolving Illusions by Dr. Suzanne Humphreys, and who is a practicing doctor still to this day, and has some wonderful bits of information and YouTube videos addressing and documentaries as well, just addressing a lot of questions that parents might have regarding how to help children who have contracted viruses such as whooping cough and the measles. So with that, I'm going to leave you, and I really appreciate all the support. Thank you so much for listening, and I really appreciate the feedback as well. And I will not take so long in publishing the next one, which will be the final in the vaccine series. I'm currently thinking of exactly what to go into, because there's just so much, and three episodes don't really cover it. But I will be back with it as soon as possible. Thank you again. Love and light.